Gita Dayal is the author of Another Green World. It's a short book about Brian Eno's 1975 album of the same name. The book is part of Continuum's 33 and a third series of books about iconic albums. Brian Eno used a deck of Oblique Strategies cards to help him create Another Green World. The cards were created by Eno and his friend, the late artist Peter Schmidt. The cards contain phrases like, "Honor thy error as a hidden intention." They're designed to help you make creative decisions. So it was only fitting that Gita Dayal used these cards to help her write her book.
When you're starting a book and when you're writing a book, you're writing like 8 or 9 or 10 drafts. I can't tell you how many drafts of this book there are, but on my computer, there's something like 30 or 40 drafts of this book. A lot of them weren't that destructive. That particular card I'm referring to is this Oblique Strategy that says, make a sudden, destructive, unpredictable action, incorporate.
Wow.
And most cards aren't like that. Most cards say things like, use a different color. So I changed the font color, you know, in the word processor I was using. There's a really great one that just says, go outside. And that is like, that solves half of the world's problems, I'll tell you, that card.
Well, it's really fascinating, isn't he? I mean, he's full of contradictions. There are things that sound very accessible and then don't. At one point in the book, you write about some of Another Green World as practically meditative. But then you say the album itself was, I think your words were, an experiment fueled by adrenaline, panic, and pure faith.
Yeah, it was. The music itself is very sort of calming and delicately textured and very beautiful. But then the really interesting contrast is you think about how it was made. Can you imagine going into a studio with no music written down and a bunch of your friends and some hired session people and saying, okay, we're going to make an album. I don't know what it's going to sound like. We have 2 months. And studio time is really expensive. They're spending sometimes hundreds of pounds per day. It wasn't like you could just mess around on your laptop with some software and have your own home recording studio.
In Another Green World, I think you wrote that he tried some things like seeing how little he could tell them, to tell the musicians about what he wanted.
Yeah.
In order just to see what would happen.
I think I write about this in one of the chapters, that he got Phil Collins so wound up at one point that Phil was like throwing beer cans across the room, like was really, really angry. He was just like, look, what do you want me to do? Eno had this idea that he wanted Phil to drum in this very sort of metronomic, mathematical way based on this very strange mathematical notation that Eno had laid out that had absolutely nothing to do with musical notation. I mean, Eno doesn't read music. The song Sky Saw, as I write, the first song on the album, the seed of Sky Saw was Eno just tapping on an A on a piano, just again and again, just tapping A in a certain rhythm, and that was sort of the genesis of the tune.
And where did it go from there? Just, I mean, that's not the way anybody else would start, or unless something happens in your head, I guess.
Yeah, I write in my book that he sort of plants these seeds in people's minds. Eno's very into things like gardening, and it's easy to see why. He's really into cooking, he's really into gardening, he's really into these things where you start out with these raw materials and you grow something new. You get something more complex, more exciting, more interesting as your result through some interesting process. The more that I learned about Eno, you know, I'd already been a fan of his work, but I was really seriously immersed in his life and work for probably almost 3 years. I really got a sense that everything Eno does is integrated very well to everything else he does. He's a real artist in that he has his concepts down, and the more you understand his work, the more you understand that absolutely everything he does relates in some interesting matrix to these other things that he's done.
There's a song on Another Green World called In Dark Trees, a very haunting song. Can you tell me about that one?
Yeah, it's a really interesting song in a lot of ways. One is that it uses this precursor to the drum machine, an analog rhythm generator. A lot of the sounds on that album, you can't really get them anymore, these particular sounds. There's this real certain warmth and fuzziness and really kind of interesting quality to that music. But you get this sort of dense underbrush of percussion in Dark Trees. It's kind of spooky. You have a lot of sort of echo. You kind of feel when you're listening to In Dark Trees that you're wandering through a dark forest late at night. You're not exactly sure where the sounds are coming from. It's a slightly haunting, it's not scary, but it's definitely a little bit unsettling.
Santiago, under the volcano, floats like a cushion on the sea. Yet I can never sleep here, everything ponders in the night.
One of the interesting things about this album is that I think it's only 5 of the tracks, and there are 14 of them, that have lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
David Shepherd wrote about, you know, that he quotes him, as a matter of fact, saying he doesn't assume that the meaning of the song is in the lyrics. Sometimes he doesn't even remember the lyrics. And listening to these, you hear these things, and they do, they're sentences, they make sense. But you get the impression that it's the voice as an instrument that is more important than what words are actually being used.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting in that Eno has often said that he was tired of this kind of hierarchy, the voice being in the front. You have the singer in the front of the stage, the drummer in the back, you have a guitar player and a bass player. He wasn't into that anymore. What he wanted was to sort of compress everything together, have everything be on the same level, have these sorts of layers. I definitely think that one of the reasons why Eno is a particularly challenging person for rock critics to write about is simply because rock criticism really grew out of literary criticism and poetry in a lot of ways. There's a reason why so many people write about Bob Dylan. Dylan is somebody where you can really analyze the lyrics, and that's a comfortable place for a lot of writers to be.
And you don't have to write about the music.
Writers being writers love talking about words. It makes sense. And so they love people like Bob Dylan. And you see, Gral Marcus has written book after book after book about Bob Dylan. There's a reason why these really gifted writers go back to people like Dylan or the Stones and the Beatles or whatever. When you have somebody who's like Brian Eno, who is saying, I really don't think the vocals are that important. I really don't think I'm that interested in the lyrics. It really stumps them because they're like, well, then what do we write about? How are we going to say anything about this? Now, for me, I'd spent many years just writing about pure electronic music. And so I love writing about the sonics, about the sounds themselves. I got it. I understood. I actually prefer writing about somebody like Eno rather than breaking down and analyzing symbolism and meaning in rock lyrics.
Listening to you talk, I'm struck by the old statement about sausage. You don't want to watch it made, even if you like to eat it. It didn't do you any damage to dissect Another Green World and find all of the pieces? You're still happy with the whole?
Yeah, no. I mean, my background's in the sciences, which is kind of a very odd background for a rock critic. I viewed this book as a scientific experiment. I had a hypothesis. I had results. I had a conclusion. I don't know where this book is going to lead. I'm going to use the oblique strategies cards in my scientific procedure. I wanted to write a book that Brian Eno would actually really like to read.
Do you know if he has?
A friend of his just got in touch with me and was like, hey, I'm meeting with him next week. If you give me a copy, I'll give it to him.
So you're waiting with bated breath?
No, because I didn't write the book to attract attention from Eno. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You didn't write it for him. You wrote it for the world.
I wrote it for other people. And the book, in a lot of ways, isn't necessarily about Another Green World or Discrete Music or whatever. It's about the creative process. It's about this universal thing. And the people who have gotten the most out of the book have been these really creative types. They're musicians, they're artists, they're painters, they're writers. And they come up to me and they say, like, this book really inspired me because I never knew this. I never knew that Eno went into the studio like this and that he was so scared. And he made an album this great, and he was only 27, 28 years old. It's a very inspiring story, and I think it's a very sort of universal story. So a lot of the people who have responded the best to the book didn't really know anything about Eno at all. I had several people read the book who told me they had never listened to Another Green World, and that the book had actually motivated them to buy Another Green World, which they had never heard before. So I had a lot of people who read the book who had actually no concept of what the album actually sounded like.
That's Brian Eno with Spirits Drifting from his 1975 album, Another Green World. Geeta Dayal is the author of the book, Another Green World.